What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Colorado Show. I am joined today by head of Creative Destruction Media, Todd Wood. What's going on, Todd?
Hey, thanks for asking me to join, Ash. I mean, I'm honored to be with such talented hosts, to be honest, because, you know, a lot of people don't know what they're doing, but you actually know what you're doing. So I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's high praise. First things first, today we've got to say congratulations to the Colorado Buffaloes on the men's basketball team on a great season. They went viral last week after this game-winning shot to beat the Florida Gators in the first round. Check this out.
Williams to inbound. Simpson with it for the lead. Long shot, good as it goes. Colorado wins. The Buffaloes have won.
All right, so I am a Colorado Buffalo alumni, class of 2001, and really proud of the guys today. Unfortunately, they faced the number 2 Marquette Golden Eagles in a tough matchup in the second round, trailing by 11 at halftime. They did come back to tie a couple of times in the second half, but they couldn't pull it out. The Eagles will play the number 11 North Carolina State in the Sweet 16 next round. Congrats to the Buffs on a great season.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing like college football. It's still kind of Americana that you can really enjoy, the excitement and everything. It's fantastic. So kudos to Colorado. I went up to see you many times at my days back at USAFA. So anyway, it's cool.
Yeah, you know, so when I was there in, you know, late 90s, graduated in 2001, and back then, now I know a lot of kids that go to CU, and it's different now. But back then, it was very much, you know, battlefield of ideas. You had people not afraid to speak out, to have debate, which is what college is for, especially liberal arts college, for debating ideas and figuring out what's true and figuring out who you are. And, you know, we would have vicious debates. I was there when the 2000 election happened with the hanging chads and Bush v. Gore, and just, you know, vehemently, I was a big old Bush flag waver back then. Vehement, angry debates, but we would always come together when the Buffaloes were on the field or on the court. And so, you know, sports, you and I were talking a little bit about before the show, so many on the right that are engaged in the truth community and, you know, kind of fighting in the information war have abandoned sports and, you know, kind of saying, if you're going to put on pride stuff or you're going to kneel for the anthem, like, oh, I'm just done with it. I'm not. And I understand it, but sports is an important battlefield. And, you know, it's definitely where the culture war is happening in a lot of ways. And certainly for young men.
Well, politics is downstream from culture, right? So we got to stay in the cultural arena. And so for the Colorado Press, Free Press, we're just getting started, folks. We want to build this into something really powerful. And this show is a big part of that. And so stay tuned. Send us your ideas. If you want to see sports, if you want to see whatever, you know, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love what you're doing. Just, you know, Colorado Free Press and what we're doing with Colorado Free Press, but what you're doing more broadly with CD Media. Do you want to talk before we move into kind of the content for today? Do you want to talk a little bit about CD Media and the other properties and what you guys are doing?
So we have 13 digital properties now, and we're really becoming a wire service without all the globalist spin, you know? So we started overseas in Eastern Europe, and we were deplatformed heavily for our news on the Biden crime family actions in Ukraine back in 2019 and 2020. And then we brought it into the U.S. So we're overseas in Eastern Europe, the Balkans, Middle East, Asia, but we're heavily involved in the U.S. now. We got 7 statewide papers. We have a military channel, armedforces.press. We have a Hispanic channel, and we're getting syndicated everywhere. We're on Vigilant News Network now with our content. And in other places. So we're growing. CDM.press is the main site. Everything flows into that if it's got a national tint to it. But every in the local papers just kind of handle down with the man on the street as to what's going on in the state. So we think that's important.
Oh, I think it's great. You know, we see the one thing that I is a, you know, when I graduated from journalism school, I ended up with a concentration in advertising because about halfway through I was done with broadcast and print, realized the corporate control and the lack of objectivity. So I figured I would, you know, use my degree to make money and go into business. And so, you know, in the advertising space, I kind of got into the habit of watching the ratings, right? The TV news or ratings that come out. It is, the American people don't fully understand how much the mainstream media has lost in terms of eyeballs. People aren't watching anymore. No, CNN's primetime best seated shows are netting less than a million views per night. And that's live plus same day viewers.
Maybe on like a couple hundred thousand views. I mean, if that, I mean, they're, yeah. In fact, we're bigger than CNN on some days.
Love it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So we are, I mean, we are seeing that the people are hungry for truth and we're committed to bringing it to them. So it's exciting.
They're irrelevant.
Exciting to see.
They're irrelevant. They have, nobody gives a crap. That's what they say. So
yeah, anyway. No, I think that's true. All right. So we have the first story up that we're going to talk about is the migrants / homeless / absolute mismanagement of our local government story. We've got this went around social this weekend because we're building this newcomer BS language into titles now. Meet Denver's first newcomer program director. She's up to the challenge. Just a minute and 23 segment here. We'll check this out.
Have arrived in Denver since December of 2022, which led the city of Denver to declare an emergency and more than $60 million and counting to provide care for them. Now, Mayor Mike Johnston and staff are gearing towards a more sustainable solution with the help of the city's first newcomer program director, Sarah Plastino, who comes with a decade of experience as a human rights and immigration defense lawyer. She also worked as an attorney for the Rocky Mountain Immigrant Advocacy Network. In this new role, her job will be to direct the city's response to the newcomers who are arriving in Denver and manage every aspect of the response. She will also coordinate and collaborate with city departments and nonprofits who have been on the front lines of this crisis.
So we are in a spot right now where we're transitioning from an emergency response to an affirmative long-term response. The guiding principles that we're using is compassion, meeting the needs of the folks, and financial sustainability, making sure that this is something that as a city we can do in the long term, because the way that we have been having to do it in response to an emergency is not financially sustainable.
Well, Plastino says the city looks to host more legal clinics and work with newcomers to help them acquire a work permit. As of now, the city of Denver has helped 1,400 migrants get work permits through legal clinics.
All right. So, so it's obvious that the plan is long-term settlement.
Yes.
We've now have a program director, and you heard it in her own words. We're moving away from this being an emergent response. This isn't a crisis, guys. We got some newcomers. We're going to welcome the folks. She even said we just got to meet the needs of the folks and bring them all in. Reminder that we have automatic voter registration. Illegals can get driver's licenses, and there is no check here.
Wow. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, I used to say that these people couldn't exist in a real market economy. But I think it's not that. I think they just don't want to exist. So they exist in this like manufactured, government-backed NGO kind of world. And the buzzwords kill me, right? The sustainability, the collaboration. I mean, you hear it all the time. And I just find it fascinating. This is whole organizational industrial complex of NGOs that really do nothing but break the law and try to destroy America. I mean, essentially. So I untether from that reality and just don't accept it and don't use those words. And if I run into it, I confront it. And so that's how I handle it. And just don't buy their products and then try not to feed the beast.
Yeah, I mean, best we can do, right? So one thing that happened this weekend is Joe Biden signed the minibus spending package that had the six bills that were outstanding in it. The border got funding for that. They actually got a $4 billion increase in their, their regular budget, $4 billion increase. Health and Human Services, who is the, you know, entity largely that contracts with the NGOs to move people throughout the interior and settle them. They got $1 billion increase. The Biden administration is still pushing for the border supplemental because it's never enough money.
Yes.
But this is, you know, we're called xenophobic and racist for saying, hey, maybe they're bringing in 10 million plus new voters. Right. Like it seems this way. Now they're just straight up saying it, like where our goal is long term sustainability for the newcomers.
We're moving to the enforcement phase. I mean, they lost the first part was to delegitimize illegitimate government, which we did. And then the second phase was kind of to defeat the lawfare, which we did. But now they're moving into the enforcement phase. If you say the wrong thing, they're passing all these laws to give you essentially, you know, consequences for your bad behavior. And we're seeing that all over the country, not just Colorado. Yeah. In Connecticut, we have a paper, the Connecticut Sentinel, and they actually reported us to the police for calling one of the town officials a globalist for hate speech and, you know, tried to have us arrested. So this is happening in Georgia and everywhere.
Yeah. So let's look at some other news. It's totally unrelated. I'm sure it's nothing.
Less than a week after two people were found dead at a Denver hotel turned homeless shelter, your investigator Brian Moss is uncovering a worrying trend. He found numbers showing that since the DoubleTree on Quebec Street was converted to a homeless shelter, calls to Denver police have skyrocketed. That includes calls for assaults, threats, and overdoses.
Yeah, it's towards the end of the day, so everybody's already in or on their way in.
Mike Morales says in the last 3 months, this industrial area in the Denver Central Park neighborhood where he works has slipped.
Upwards of three times a week, you'll see the fire department, you'll see ambulances, you'll see any kind of first responders right there just parked right in front of the building.
He's talking about the former DoubleTree Hotel, 100 yards from his traffic sign and barricade business, the hotel that the city turned into a homeless shelter in December, part of the mayor's plan to house the homeless. Morales says every day he now sees hotel residents doing drugs, walking the streets like zombies, as he puts it, and impacting his employees.
She was the first one here in the morning and would lock the doors as soon as she got here. And she carried mace just because of the kind of people that are right there and the way that they would just walk up and down the streets in the middle of the morning. So she was worried about her safety.
And these new numbers suggest there is plenty to worry about. Last September, October, and November, there were 13 calls for police help. But in the 3 months since it was turned into a homeless shelter, 391 calls for police, a nearly 3,000% increase with calls for sex assaults, deaths, overdoses, and disturbances.
So they recently cut this part of the fence.
Morales says last weekend someone tried to burglarize the business. He suspects it's connected to the increasing number of homeless now in this neighborhood. In January alone, 244 calls for service to the new shelter. That's more than seven a day. And last weekend, two people were murdered here.
And we're here fully dedicated to ensuring that this site runs safely and smoothly for the guests that are here and for the surrounding community.
Cole Chandler, the mayor's senior advisor on homelessness, says he's now on site full time and other steps are now being taken to tighten up security here. New security cameras inside and outside the hotel. 24-hour Denver police surveillance, door alarms, and only one entrance.
People were able to kind of come and go to this building without us always knowing exactly who was coming inside.
He says residents are now being educated, too, on not constantly calling 911 for help. Mike Morales hopes steps like those work so he and his employees can let their guard down.
I think you're on mute, Ash.
Sorry, thanks.
No worries.
So we are moving into the we're gonna make the stats go down. Just don't call the cops.
Don't call the cops. That makes
don't
a lot
report
better.
It. Yeah, this is so we're gonna the next story we're gonna go into is another area of Denver that's experiencing a surge of crime. We're seeing this reported as isolated areas, and they really want to focus on where it is. Right. Oh, well, this is a building that was turned into a homeless shelter. This is a 7-Eleven. We'll get to that story in a second. You know, and it's, oh, it just must be where these things are happening. No, it's your policies. It's
exactly.
And they don't mention migrant crime in the homeless crime in that report, but they have converted it to a homeless shelter in line with the same timing of the migrant influx. And they've been reporting over the past couple of weeks that the temporary housing for the influx of migrants is has run out, and a lot of them were dumped on the streets. So the two are inextricably linked in my mind.
And it's only going to get a lot worse. So yeah. So obviously. Be ready.
Yeah. So this story here out of Westward, police, mayor's office, and city officials working to stop Ogden street crime. This is over on Capitol Hill. You can see this is the dots give you the numbers of crime happening. Numbers of crime, people just criming all over the place out here. Let me see here. I've lost my second overlay here. Give me one sec. The level of cope for that we see for you know, oh, it's happening because we're going to get into that here. Crime and drugs on Ogden Street between 14th and Colfax Avenues have become so prevalent that officials with the mayor's office, the Denver Police Department, Denver City Council, and the Colfax Business Improvement District are meeting to discuss solutions. 110 criminal offenses were reported in the area between September 2023 and 2024. The mayor's office is working closely with DPD, DOTI, Councilman Chris Hines' office, and the Colfax BID, which again is Business Improvement District, to identify potential solutions for the community members and businesses along that stretch of Ogden, the press secretary for the mayor says. And again, here's a look at what that crime map looks like. The Denver Police Department's communications director says, quote, "We have been making some efforts over in that area to include extra patrols. That includes foot and bike patrols. There have also been some narcotic-related enforcement operations in the area." This is my favorite part of the whole thing. Frank LeContore, executive director of the Colfax BID, says a meeting was just held a few weeks ago on February 28th to discuss what could be leading to all the crime and drug use in the 1400 block of Ogden, with a nearby 7-Eleven at 1000 East Colfax Avenue being one of the main focuses. All the smart bureaucrat and official government official people are getting together to figure out how to solve homelessness. The video we just watched, that guy that's the chief advisor to the mayor on homelessness, he inspires nothing but confidence. Let's be honest.
I mean, wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall in that room? Yes. And to listen to them deny reality for like an hour and talk around themselves and not admit what's actually happening?
Well, they tell us. So buckle up, because they tell us we're looking at various facets, from the build environment, which is one thing that can help or hurt the activity of crime, to the activity that's going on there itself and various police responses and what businesses can do, as well as the BID. Specifically, we discussed what the BID and city can do in collaboration with these businesses to deal and address everything. One question that came up: is the 7-Eleven ownership better now that corporate has taken over? Is it worse? Is it the same? There was some curiosity about it because corporate took over the franchise of the 7-Eleven at the corner of Josephine and Colfax. And people noted how a year or more after corporate took over the ownership of the 7-Eleven, it was closed. So they're wondering if that means corporate is thinking of closing the one at Ogden. Corporate did not respond to a request for comment. So according to the very smart bureaucratic people, it's a mismanagement of the 7-Eleven and, right, and the corporate ownership that's leading to all the crime from their policies enabling crime.
Amazing. You know, there was a skit on Saturday Night Live where some people were marooned on an island, and they're trying to build rescue committees, and they have committees of who's going to make a rescue sign. Right. And then the next day, some copy machines wash up on the beach, and they're like making reports and everything. And meanwhile, a ship steams by and nobody notices, like a rescue ship. So it's kind of like this, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. First of all, I'm well on record of saying I don't believe that there are criminal invaders and there are human trafficking victims at the border. There's no in between. The people are breaking the law to come here. The trafficking victims don't have a choice. They're being trafficked.
Sure.
Everybody else is a criminal invader. We're calling them newcomers and welcoming them and giving them housing and forgiving their crime. The people around this area of Colfax will tell you exactly what the problem is. Residents, business owners, and employees told Westward last month that drug dealers, drug users, prostitutes, and other shady characters invaded the 1400 block of Ogden during the pandemics pandemic, and things have gotten progressively worse since then. They're often seen using drugs or engaging in alleged drug deals. There have also been multiple reports of assaults, robberies, auto theft, and disorderly conduct at all hours, according to the DPD crime map. Our customers feel very uncomfortable, said Glam House employee. People come up to their cars, come up to them when they're outside. It's scary.
Oh my. I'm glad I don't live there.
Yeah, same. It's really very silly. And so you know what they are going to focus on? You're going to love this one. What they are going to focus on is mocking it. So we've got a fun group. Let me refresh this to make sure I have the right video here.
This is coming everywhere, though. I'd say I'm glad I don't live there, but it's coming everywhere. I mean, you're not going to be able to get away from it.
Agreed. So we've got civil disobedience happening here with regards to this influx and the way that the government is treating it, calling them newcomers, welcoming their activity. And here, you know, we're going to see the government focus on how dare you mock what we're doing.
Hate speech being removed from the state capitol grounds this morning. These signs were bolted right onto posts. They were made to look like normal signs.
The words hookers, migrants, and undocumented were written on those signs. Fox 31's Vicente Arenas broke the story this morning. He joins us live now from the capitol with the very latest. Vicente.
Matt, and we are standing where those signs were posted. I want to give you an idea where they were. This is one of those signs. Then we come a few feet this way, another sign. This is an area where a lot of lawmakers go in and out of the Capitol every day.
The signs were first spotted outside the state capitol around 5:30 Friday morning and appear to be aimed at migrants and Democrats. Migrant advocates say they contain hate speech and went too far.
I think it definitely went overboard. Even just having that kind of hate in your heart, to me, is a step too far.
Fox 31 spoke to the person who spotted them.
I thought they were just some type of caution signs. Absolutely thought they were some type of legitimate sign from the city.
The signs were attached to city-owned street signs on the edge of the east side of state capitol property. One sign says, caution, undocumented Democrats, and shows people running with weapons, one of them pulling a child. The other sign says, migrant hookers. Below it, another sign reading $20.
It's very hurtful because it's just a form of hate. I was saddened that somebody would actually go that far and put so much time and energy to do that.
Capitol crews removed the signs. CSP is looking into how they got there. The signs appeared at the Capitol as Denver continues dealing with an influx of migrants, stirring a fiery debate over the crisis.
All right. So what is really interesting about this story is when you come down here, we've got, where is it? CSP said the person placing the signs here could face charges ranging from vandalism to criminal mischief. At this time, the agency has not identified the person who placed them there. The Denver police said it's aware that signs were posted and police are looking into find who placed them. So let's definitely focus on that.
Right.
As, finding who did it as Denver shifts to a sustainable response instead of treating this like a migrant influx. Right. So,
you know, and who gets to decide what hate speech, right? I mean, that's the real, that's the term they're using everywhere, hate speech. So we got to stop that. But, you know, that's free speech. As long as you're not hurting anybody, sorry, you can say what you want.
Yeah, I think the signs are hilarious. I hope more people do it. I think that this is a beautiful form of peaceful noncompliance and civil disobedience, and we need more of that because we have self-pronounced Marxists, appointed ones, making policy. We're going to get into in our next segment the gun policy and the assault weapons ban that was sponsored by an appointed democratic socialist. He's a communist, and he's got the Palestinian flag on his desk right in front of himself on the floor. Yep. and we have appointed people. It shouldn't be allowed that appointed people get to make policy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that's what we've got. So let's get into these gun bills here. This is a Nobody is coming to take your guns edition. And huge shout out to Cynthia Alderman from Restore Liberty, from Taylor Rose from Rocky Mountain Gun, Colorado, and from Todd Watkins, who is El Paso County Vice Chair, who helped pull this list together. This, we covered this on the Colorado show before. We've covered these images, and some of the bills have passed. Some of them have, you know, stalled out, but there's new ones now. So we're going to talk first about the assault weapons ban. I'm just going to focus in on two of these bills, but I want to make sure that everybody is still aware of the bills, because the Colorado legislature loves to cram stuff in at the end of the session. This full thread is pinned on my Twitter at Ash in America, if folks want to go get it. But the HB 241292 is basically the assault weapons ban. We we heard testimony on this for several days last week. On the Friday, it was removed from the schedule. I've got a video clip here from Taylor Rhodes talking about the current status of the assault weapons ban.
So this is where we're at. Last Friday, the assault weapons ban was pulled off the calendar. It's now been put back on the calendar for Monday. However, it is not on the special order calendar. It is just on the general order calendar, meaning it is very likely that it will not be taken up next week. Now, another reason we believe it won't be taken up next week is because we have heard rumors and reports that next week will consist of the budget, which normally takes all week. In addition, Monica Duran has alluded to that they want to take Good Friday off and give all of the state representatives an Easter weekend. So with this said, it is likely the assault weapons ban could be brought back up, but it is not likely that it's brought back up until April. However, they could ram it through at a moment's notice. So we will stay vigilant at the Capitol. I've instructed our lobbyists to be there every day this week and the following. So we will make sure to give you a report as soon as we know more. But in the meantime, we need to keep the pressure up. Now is not the time to let off the gas just because we have some momentum. With that said, sign your petition. Go to rmgo.org/AWB. Get in the fight with us now. Contact your House representatives and your state senators. If this does cross over into the Senate, we will need to put double the pressure we did on the House. We need you in the fight. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right. So this is their most egregious disarmament attempt. This bill defines assault weapon and prohibits a person from manufacturing, importing, purchasing, selling, offering to sell, or transferring ownership of an assault weapon. Bill further prohibits a person from possessing a rapid fire trigger activator. There's a lot more stuff packed in it as well. And they faced incredible opposition from the people when they brought this bill when they had this bill in public comment. One of the most epic testimonies was that of Scott Shamblin, who decided to use their own language to mock them. My favorite part of this is the end where the legislators react to them. This is real testimony. He sat in front of the body and gave this testimony deadpan. Nailed it. If folks want to find him, it's Scott Shamblin on Twitter. He also did one for the abortion, against the abortion bills coming through that was epic. But this is the level of respect that these people deserve.
Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Scott Shamblin, they, them. I represent myself. I'm an anti-fascist, democratic socialist, and it's good to see a fellow comrade propose this bill. I'm a student of human rights with emphasis on gun control. I support this bill. Whether it's Tuesday or today, it's a good day to revoke the 2A. You may hear people today say, when seconds matter, the police are minutes away. The answer is not that difficult. Defund the police and send out unarmed, non-threatening social workers who can de-escalate using gentle parenting techniques like positive reinforcement and Werther's original candies. To all you gun owners out there, there are no bad guys, just people who do bad things. And usually it's because they're hangry. So maybe trade your S&P for a Snickers and tea and make a new friend. If thought corrupts language, language can also corrupt thought. Another benefit of this bill is it helps us continue cleaning up the dictionary. Standard capacity magazines are referred to as high capacity magazines. ARMA light rifles are assault weapons. Small caliber plastic pistols are now high caliber weapons of war. Similar to our other recent additions, like minor attracted persons and views opposing ours being fascism. I'm so proud of the progress we've made. Let's expand this bill to continue incrementally outlawing guns, boiling the frog slowly, if you will.
After this bill, we should plan an actual gun roundup as we pull the fourth and go door to door. You can put people at ease by reminding them that I'm from the government and I'm here to help. After seizing all firearms, we can expand this to our opposition's cars, homes, semi-trucks, bank accounts, retirement accounts, and wives. We should also go ahead and amend the bill to include hard and heavy objects. If a radical were to throw a can of corn at a high velocity, it too would be an assault weapon. Everything should be soft and squishable, just like my masculinity, so nobody gets hurt. War is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Daddy Joe is my waifu. Thank you.
Okay. All right. No, come on. All right. Some witnesses may choose to use a humorous approach in their testimony. That is their prerogative. We need to keep it professional and respectful in here, please. With that, are there questions of this panel? Rep. Harrod.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify, you can use humor. We love humor. You just can't clap after it. Okay. Good. With a
little. You just can't clap. They hate. So when I 2020, I, you know, first started getting involved in going to these forums at the Capitol. And it was shocking to me how you are not, can't clap, can't acknowledge, can't, you have to stay completely silent. It's all, and they really, really hate it when it's obvious that the people are opposed to what they're doing. I love that. You can use humor. We love humor. You just can't clap.
Just can't
acknowledge it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Wow. So again, Scott Shamblin on Twitter, everybody, absolute badass when it comes to public testimony.
Got to hand it to him. My squishy masculinity. That was my favorite.
Yeah. I love all his little quips, you know, it's a great day for the 2A and like all the, and it is using his abortion one is amazing as well, because it breaks down just the evils of abortion using their own language and puts it out there with this kind of satirical approach. It puts it out there how ridiculous.
It's kind of South Park-ish, you know?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. All right. So that's the assault weapons ban. We heard from Taylor where that one sits. SB 24-131 is the sensitive spaces bill, banning open carry pretty much everywhere except in your home. This passed through Senate Judiciary. Or sorry, no, it's still in Senate Judiciary, but they haven't scheduled a date to vote on the amendments yet. Or at least at the time that I did this thread, which was a couple days ago. 24-13-10, this is the slower bill, makes it so that you cannot have teachers, trained teachers are prohibited from carrying. 1270 requires all gun owners to maintain liability insurance. 1353 requires gun merchants to obtain a permit in addition to their federal firearms license. This so some of these are new since we've published on this show. We've done all of these Rocky Mountain gun owner images before, but there's some new bills. 24-1174 increases the requirements to obtain a concealed carry permit, makes it more difficult. You can see here, bill allows a person to demonstrate competence with a handgun by holding current certification as a peace officer. Bill prohibits a person from being issued a permit if the person was convicted of certain misdemeanor offenses within 5 years before submitting a permit application. Makes it deceptive trade practices for a person to claim to be a verified instructor, which, I mean, it probably should be deceptive trade practices, except for the fact that I don't think that these guys should come anywhere near firearms because they're, you know, determined to remove the Second Amendment.
Completely.
Yeah. So we've got a new tax on firearms and ammunition. That's HB 24-1349. And it is March 25th. So tomorrow at 1:30, there will be a hearing on that new tax. And then this one I wanted to bring to everyone's attention. 24003, Senate Bill 24003, Colorado Bureau of Investigation, authority to investigate firearms crimes. Concerning the authority of Colorado Bureau of Investigation to investigate illegal activity involving firearms and in connection therewith making an appropriation, bill authorizes CBI to investigate particular illegal activity involving firearms. Bill requires Bureau to communicate with law enforcement, and then it gives them a whole bunch of money to do it. Now, why I wanted to focus or to bring up that one is that's the Colorado Bureau of Investigation basically developing a red flag committee. It's the gun police, and they're going to go out and, you know, this is the if they do pass an assault weapons ban, this, I imagine, is your investigative body that's going to come and disarm everyone, right? What I find very interesting is that the DOJ is doing the same thing. Launch of the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose a threat to themselves or others. The establishment of the center is the latest example of the Justice Department's work to use every tool provided by the landmark Bipartisan Safer Communities Act to protect communities from gun violence. Hub and spoke, Todd.
Yeah, you know, this is going on. There's a plan, right? There's a reason for all this, purpose. In Georgia, they are trying to pass a law. We may have stopped it. I don't know. But they are trying to pass a law that if you meme somebody or make fun of somebody or use AI prior to the election, you can be sent to prison for 5 years. So in their, you know, they're also in Connecticut, they're using the hate speech language, which they're doing here. So this is going to be a predicate to take your guns, right? So if you and I say something hateful on the air, then they can say, you can't have a firearm, and they'll come to your house and take them. That's what's coming.
Yeah. Or, you know, your healthcare background shit, because everybody, you know, you're unvaccinated. Well, you must be a threat, right?
Exactly.
Got to take your weapons.
Exactly.
You oppose the gender theory and stuff they're shoving down kids' throats at school. You're a danger. You're a threat. You're
if you show up at a Board of Education meeting and raise your voice, you're dangerous, and we need to take your guns.
Refuse to call them newcomers.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly.
The way it feels, I mean, it sounds so silly, right? Being in the United States of America, but that certainly seems the way.
And it's
way
why
it's
people have to be involved. You know,
yep.
I'll just say the reason we wanted to open Colorado Free Press is that CDM were running to the sound of the guns. You would be really surprised how much they hate just a tiny little bit of media accountability. They really can't handle it. So spread this everywhere and call your legislators, because it still matters and we still have a voice.
Yeah. You know, the next one, this is another example of the level of, you know, top down, the gun grabbing lobbies are, you know, international, stemming down to national, and then in our local communities. And this one, the 24066, require credit and debit card transactions between consumers and licensed firearm dealers to be marked with a distinct code, allowing the government to track legal firearm purchases. This one's going to be heard in the Senate House Business Affairs and Labor hearing on March 28th. They tried this at a federal level last year or the year before. They tried the MCC code thing. They tried to do it nationally. Couldn't get it done nationally. So what's next? Do it at the state level.
Exactly. And that's across the board. All this mental health stuff that we're seeing, same thing. You know, in Georgia, they want to put you in jail. If two people go anonymously to the police and say you're crazy, they can commit you. That's what they're trying to put through. So at the state level, not the federal level. So you're right.
Yeah, but nobody's coming for your guns or trying to disarm you or trying to make you vulnerable in your communities, right?
Right. Right.
1348, this is requiring if you're leaving a fire. So right now in Colorado, there's pretty much no restrictions on firearms and vehicles. You have the ability to carry a firearm to protect yourself and your vehicle. This puts restrictions, regulations on it. There's nothing sacred. There's no area without the government's regulation. Requires any firearm left in a vehicle to be stored in a locked, hard-sided case, out of plain view, or in a locked trunk. Note, they killed a bill to increase penalties for firearm theft. House Judiciary referred to the Committee of the Whole on March 13th, waiting a hearing. So they killed a bill to make it a, you know, greater penalty if you steal somebody's firearm. So always, always looking out for the rights of criminals.
Exactly.
But if a lawful gun owner has their gun in the, what do you call it, glove box or the center console, and, you know, it, handy should they need it, but not, you know, out, they're not brandishing it, waving it around. It's just in there. They can be punished, because we're, that is the goal, is that, is that lawful gun owners be punished, and it becomes more and more difficult for lawful gun owners to, you know, carry, which makes all of us more vulnerable.
Exactly.
Particularly in the sensitive spaces, since they're making all of those more vulnerable. At the end of this thread, guys, I have a link to where you can find your legislators to make sure that you reach out and tell them how ridiculous they are.
What's a sensitive space? That kind of a weird connotation.
Churches, campuses, school, you know, public schools, college campuses, churches, arenas, pretty much anywhere except for your home. So this is kind of the law of the land in Denver, city ordinance. You can't have you can't open carry. They don't have the ability to prohibit you from concealed carrying yet. Mm-hmm. And they certainly are trying to with this bill. They're basically making it so that you can't carry a weapon anywhere except in your own home, which is, I mean, that's what New York Pistol and Rifle Association versus Bruin was about on a different scale, I think. And the Supreme Court shot that down, but Colorado doesn't care.
Yeah. We'll see how the Supreme Court holds up.
Yeah.
They're a little squishy. So
agreed. All right. So why don't we hit our, we're going to do a break here from our sponsors, and then we will bring on our guest. Give me just one moment. We'll be right back.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
It's going to be a good day.
Monday, we do have a little bit left available here. Check us out, familyfarmbeefbox.com. Thanks. Have a good day.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
All right, and we are back. So we're going to transition and talk about January 6th here for a minute. This my good friend Rebecca Lavrens, who I have covered her story since she was indicted and when she turned herself in, and she's in D.C. right now. Her trial is starts tomorrow, and I want to play this real quick video. She went viral this week. It's the moment that she got back to D.C., had not been back in Washington, D.C. and since January 6th, emotional moment. And then when we get back, she'll join us.
That my own country is treating me like a criminal. It's because I believe that they stole my rightful president. And just standing up for my country, it makes me a criminal. And it's just not right. It feels so weird to be here. Over three years ago, I was here.
So Rebecca walked through the Capitol. She went through an open door, walked through the Capitol, stayed in the ropes, was inside 8 minutes, talked to the police while she was in there, exited peacefully. And now the government's treating her as a criminal. She joins us now. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Ash. Thank you so much for getting me on just less than 24 hours before I get to go to trial to defend the country that I love.
Yeah. So how is it? How has it been being back in DC after all this time?
Well, I decided to stay outside the camp, outside DC, but I'm here today. My daughters are with me, and I just spent 2 hours walking through the beautiful cherry blossoms. I mean, I love flowers. I love springtime. It's most favorite time of the year. Not a cloud in the sky. It's just a really joyful moment. I'm seeing so many thousands of people that I know are here because we have liberty and justice, and I'm not happy that they could have this taken away if I don't stand up and we don't stand up as a people to stand up for our freedoms and our liberty and the justice that belongs to us as citizens of the United States. I ended up walking through the Jefferson Memorial and saw some of the wonderful quotes that he said. So I'm honored to feel that I can stand up for my country. I know that so many of us, they've treated so wrongly. Others much, much worse than I ever was. But at the same time, we are standing for what's true and for truth. And I'm excited to be here. You can see the Capitol, I think, in the background.
Yeah. It looks like a beautiful day in D.C., which, yep. I always just picture it being a swamp. Yeah. Yeah. So tell everybody about first of all, what was your experience on January 6th and what are the charges against you?
Well, my experience was I was around probably, I don't know how many more thousands of people. There's probably tens of thousands of people here, but I think there was at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people here on January 6, 2021. And when I was here, there was such a jubilant, joyful spirit. People that loved our country, that still love our country, patriots who aren't going to back down. We're not full of fear. That's I'm feeling right now. There's no fear in me because we're standing for the truth, for truth. And that's why we're here. That's why we were here on January 6th. That's why I was here before, to stand with millions of people who know that something did go wrong in 2020 in that election, and we're not about to back down. I'm carrying a little, I got to tell you this, I'm carrying a little coin in my pocket. My grandsons gave this to me the other day. It says, lions, not sheep. And I'm just, I don't know, I guess right now I'm probably getting emotional again because I've had waves of this while I've been here. It's just like the love that I have for this country that God put in my heart. God founded this country on the covenant that he wanted this nation to be a land that gave glory to him and would advance the Christian faith, and we'd be a godly nation for generations to come. And that's what my stand is. That's why I came to Colorado, I'm from Colorado. That's why I came to the Capitol on January 6th, because I love my country and we need to stand for truth and what's right, and it's on God's heart. And that's why I'm here. And God wants a godly nation. If we take God out of our country, then we don't have a nation anymore. And that's why I feel like, I think I might have said this before, but I don't know. I guess you had asked me earlier, what am I feeling? I don't know if you said that, but I was thinking about my feelings today, and I was thinking there's part of me that's very joyful, but then there's a part that, because I've never been this way before, I'm not thrilled with having to go to a trial, but I wish God could do it for me, but he needs a flesh and body, and that's me, I guess. And so I'm here because of God. And like I told my attorneys the other day, I said, you guys are going to do your best and God will do the rest.
Rebecca, we're honored to have you on because you're a role model to everybody. So thank you. And I get mad at a lot of people who ask, why won't somebody do something? Well, then we have to say, well, you're the one that has to do something. So thank you for standing up. And people that are on the couch or on the golf course, they need to get up and get involved.
That's exactly right. That's my message, mantra, whatever you want to call it. Get off the couch. I mean, prepare your heart, study the Bible, study God's word, study the Constitution, and then have a relationship with a God enough who loves you and will speak to you and tell you what to do and then act on it. That's what we got to get up. We can't sit back. All it takes for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And that's what the statesman Edmund Burke said years and years ago. And I will not back down. I won't be quiet. I'll stand.
Yeah, they did offer you a plea, didn't they?
Yes, they did, Ash, right at the very beginning. And before I even got offered it, I knew in my heart that God would never want me to take a plea. I would never either, because I believe I was doing the right thing. I would not take a plea.
And just for the audience's sake, what are the charges against you?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The first one is entering and remaining in a restricted building. The second one is disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building. Third one, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a Capitol building. And then the fourth one, parading and ticketing in a restricted building.
So if you are, so the, what's the disorderly conduct? Is that prayer?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even say but a few words in there. I didn't shout, didn't wave anything, just walked through and peacefully and just made my presence known. Carried God into that Capitol. That's what I believe I was doing, because as a believer since my teens, I knew that God, know that God lives inside me, and wherever I go, he goes. So he was in that building with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I became aware of Rebecca's story when they indicted her and she was going to turn herself in. So I reviewed the FBI report. And what I was really stunned by, and maybe Rebecca, you can talk a little bit about this, was how it was, I think, 2 full years after the fact, or almost 2 full years after the fact, that they came after you. And then, you know, when I saw you in the courtroom, shackled, hands and feet, orange jumpsuit, like some common criminal, right? Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Well, actually, I didn't have to wear a jumpsuit.
It's my memory bias. I was so mad. When I saw you shackled, I was so mad. And then I went to talk to the marshal about it, and he was like, no, you can't ask me any questions.
Yeah. Well, I think we all know that they have a, there's a certain plan that they have to intimidate you enough to, so that you'll cave, and they picked the wrong person, but I'll never cave. So, yeah, I came back after January 6th, didn't think I'd be investigated for such a honorable thing, in my opinion, to stand up for my First Amendment rights, to stand up for grievances. And I felt like we had 2 million of us, or how many of us were at the Capitol over 3 years ago, to stand up for what we thought was not right. And then 4 months later in April, Patriots Day, as a matter of fact, I got the FBI knocked on my door and wanted to investigate me. Thankfully, I don't know, God's boldness came out of me and said, can you come back another day? I'm baking a cake for my son. And so we set up a different time. They investigated me then, but it wasn't until 2.5 years later is when they actually arrested me. So December 19th of 2022. Yep. They just want to intimidate us. They want us to make feel like we're doing something wrong, when it's not wrong to stand up and love your country and fight against the ideologies that they're trying to indoctrinate us all with, and say that we're going to have to be a socialist or Marxist country. And that's not what our country was founded on. It was founded on godly principles, and we need to return to God. It's the only way we'll have justice. There's a scripture in Proverbs 28, verse 5 in the Bible. It says, evil men do not understand justice, but those who crave and seek the Lord understand it fully. So that's why my message is, spend time getting to know God, and if you don't know him, get to know him, and he will show you what to do, and we'll stand up and we'll get this country back.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I know that you've got so much going on with your trial starting tomorrow. You'll definitely be in our prayers. Where can people follow what's going on, find you, help you out, donate to your fees? Where can folks get to you?
Yes, go to my website, restoringgodlyculture.com. There's a donate tab on there where you can donate to my funds. I'm going to have a lot of legal fees, I'm sure, at the end of this. So there's a donate tab there, but you can also read more about me, things that I'm doing. And if you want to follow my journey, just drop your email into on that website. There's a place for that. You can drop your email, and then I'll put you on my email list so you can keep up with my journey, because it's not going to be over after this trial. We have a lot to do to restore our country back to godliness, and I'm on a mission to get that done. So support me any way you can. Prayers, encouragement always helps, but I know God's going to be with me this next week. Just pray that I use my mouth the way he wants it to be used. He'll do it. So restoringgodlyculture.com. Thanks so much, Ash, for having me on.
Of course. Thank you, absolutely. Yeah, thanks. And we'll definitely be following it. We'll have Rebecca back after the trial, talk about how it went. So that is pretty much our show. You know, it's when she turned herself in,
mm-hmm.
you know, go into the courtroom. The one thing I will say is her public defender that was assigned during that arraignment was amazing. And there was, you know, 15 of us there answering all her questions. But what she said about the effort to intimidate is 100% true. Hmm. We showed up, did kind of there was, you know, 15, 20 of us doing a prayer group in the parking lot before she went to turn herself in at the FBI headquarters in downtown Denver. And we walked, and then she was supposed to make a phone call to tell them that she was there. They saw us and they said, "You have to come alone. You can't have any of those people with you. You have to come alone." And all of us were like, "Well, that's not happening."
Yeah.
So we followed at like a 50-foot distance and watched this whole thing go down. I've written about it. It's both of the articles that I wrote contemporaneous with her arraignment are on my Twitter. I just posted those links again yesterday. And everybody should check her out, restoringgodlyculture.com. On Twitter, she is at J6PrayinGrandma, and it's Prayin with no G, grandma. But she's, you know, she's got bigger balls than most men I know. So,
you know, around the country, I see a lot of different geographic locations, and there's always people that come up to me and say, I was told to get involved and do this. And I think that's something across the country that's happening, because people are, for lack of a better word, called or told or instructed or by somehow or higher power to get involved and to do something. So that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, I agree. And the level of, you know, coercion, I think it's coercion too. They offered her a plea. Right. They want their headline. They want their metric. We rounded up, you know, 800 J6ers and put them all in here and there. And we got these accomplishments. Mm-hmm. The problem, one of the big problems they have, is that the J6 truth is coming fast and furious. Most people realize that the entirety of the institutions lied to them on that day. My biggest beef, and this goes for every alt media, you know, by new media, not all media, but new media publications as well, is think about how many cameras were pointed on the backside of the Capitol that day. Now, the violence against the American people, peaceful American people that were down on the lawn, just start getting gassed, canisters, flashbangs thrown into them. That didn't break until June of 2021, despite the fact that there was, first of all, all of us, we didn't have signal, but we were able to record. Right?
Right.
And then all of the media entities, cameras everywhere. There's no reason that the violence against the American people should have been suppressed, but it was until Gateway Pundit published it in June of 2021. There was a coordinated effort by all of the institutions, and, you know, really underpinned and only successful because of the media, to make everybody believe that this was a deadly insurrection.
Yeah.
And it's a lie. And completely. We know it's a lie. Yeah.
Completely.
There were so the fact that they're still pursuing these cases is just, it's insane.
It's just vengeance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the show that we have for you guys today. You can find all of my content at linktree.com/ashinamerica. I have Culture of Change coming up at 6 p.m. Eastern over on Badlands Media. We're talking about the top-down pushing of the porn industry, porn and kind of sexual degradation of culture as a globalist endeavor today on that show. And where can people find you next?
Oh, I need some help. I was deplatformed off Twitter at the time, 2 years ago, or 3 or 4 years ago now, for our reporting in Ukraine and outing the Biden crime family. So please go to X now, and I'm back on, and help me rebuild my 200,000 that I lost at realltoddwood.com. And put cdm.press in your daily scan. Put the Colorado Free Press in your daily scan if you're in the state or interested in the state. And help us grow. Spread the word. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, everybody. We will see you back here next week at 2 o'clock Mountain Time for the Colorado Show. Have a fantastic week, everybody.